Greetings and happy Friday to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's kick off in Casablanca, where Morocco will host Nigeria in Sunday's African Nations Championship football final. Our VOA listeners will remember this is for locally based players in Africa. Reporter Samson Omale has a preview of the final, as well as other African football news. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. Nigeria will look to upset host Morocco in the 2018 African Nations Championship final, set for the start Mohamed V in Casablanca on Sunday evening. The Atlas Lions and the Super Eagles are bidding to become the fourth different winners of the CHAN, joining the honors board of DR Congo, who were champions in 2009 and 2016, Tunisia in 2014, and Libya in 2015. Both sides came through the semifinals on Wednesday evening, where Morocco needed extra time to overcome a resilient Libya 3-1 in their North African derby in Casablanca, while Nigeria edged Sudan 1-0 in a hard-fought clash in Marrakesh. Kenyan Premier League 2018 season is set for kick-off this weekend, with two matches planned for live television broadcast. A double-header at Nakuru's Afra Stadium pitting Ulinzi Stars against Zoo FC and Posta Rangers versus AFC Leopards will be beamed live on yet-to-be-announced broadcaster on Saturday. Elsewhere in East Africa, Ugandan football fans will have an opportunity to see the FIFA World Cup trophy as it will be displayed for 2 days at the Lugongo Stadium. The trophy, which will be received by Ugandan government officials or the president on March the 5th, will be available for the rest of Ugandans to view inside Lugungo Cricket Oval in Kampala. And staying with football news, a host of African players were involved in various transfers on deadline day. Senegalese striker Demba Ba makes his Turkish league return after joining Göztepe from Chinese Super League side Shanghai Shenhua. Demba Ba scored 29 goals in 37 appearances for the Chinese club. Ghana international Andre Ayew joined English Premier League side Swansea City from West Ham United for a club record fee. La Liga side UD Las Palmas announced the double signing of Nigerian internationals Ogenekaro Etebo and Emmanuel Emineke on deadline day. Algerian international striker Islam Slimani completed a loan move to Newcastle United from Leicester City until the end of the season. While Senegal forward Homa Babacar switched Serie A sides after joining U.S. Sassuolo from ACF Fiorentina in a swap deal for Diego Fallini. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson, and have a nice weekend. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on The Voice of America. Samson Omale mentioned the Kenyan Premier Football League in his report. Well, let's give a sunny side of sports birthday salute to one of our loyal VOA listeners in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. Happy 42nd birthday to Vincent Maloba, the beat cop of the sunny side of sports. Vincent is a constable in the Kenya Police Department's Diplomats Protection Unit. And in terms of protection, I always feel safer and happier when I know Vincent is tuning in to the show. And on that note, Vincent says he's listening to the sunny side of sports this evening on 107.5 FM, the VOA's 24/7 FM affiliate in the Kenyan capital. Happy birthday to Vincent Maloba, the beat cop of the sunny side of sports. Here in the United States, the big sporting event this weekend is the National Football League's 52nd Super Bowl championship game in Minneapolis, Minnesota. My VOA colleague Jim Stevenson has a super preview for us, as well as a look back at Roger Federer's record-extending 20th Grand Slam tennis title earlier this week.
We're in the final few days before Super Bowl 52 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's a rematch of Super Bowl 39 between the defending champion New England Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles. While the five-time champion Patriots have a lot of Super Bowl experience, Eagles coach Tom Pederson has players he's looking to for leadership.
Of course, it's been a while since the Eagles have been there, but you know, we do have a couple players on this team that have been there just as early as last season. You know, we can lean on those guys, obviously, and some of the experiences that some of our other players have been to the Super Bowl and all that.
No matter how many times he has won, New England quarterback Tom Brady knows how special this run with the Patriots has been.
Could never imagine getting, you know, the kind of, you know, team achievements we've done and had. I mean, I don't think anyone can ever take those for granted. These are pretty amazing times for all of us.
Eagles quarterback Nick Foles once had the NFL's highest passer rating in 2013, and he tied the record for most touchdown passes in a single game with 7. But his long journey to his first Super Bowl was anything but glamorous.
There was bumps in the road, but you were able to overcome them with, you know, the people that are around you, the people that believe in you and love you. I mean, that's a special thing, and that's where, in this moment, it's something I reflect on.
And Eagles coach Tom Pederson hopes his players have fun.
I want them to, you know, let their personalities show. Let them have fun. I mean, enjoy the moment. This is why we coach and play, is for these opportunities and these moments right here.
Super Bowl 52 is this Sunday, February 4th. Roger Federer has proven he's the ageless wonder of the tennis courts. The Swiss great, at the tender age of 36, has again won the Australian Open, just as he did last year. This year, he topped Marin Cilic of Croatia in the final, 6-2, 6-7, 6-3, 3-6, 6-1.
It's about living the emotions that I went through tonight again at the trophy ceremony, going through a tough roller coaster match, you know, five-setter against Cilic, who's a great player, and then getting number 6 here, number 20 overall. It's just a very special moment. Defending my title from last year, that, you know, sort of the fairy tale continues. That's what stands out for me.
As Roger mentioned, it was his 20th overall major title, and it seems a bit of a distraction.
I was not allowed to think of it going into the match, because that's exactly when things go bad, you know, when you think too far ahead. And I think that's what was a tricky one tonight. All day I was thinking, how would I feel if I won it? How would I feel if I lost it? I'm so close now, yet so far. And I think it was going through the whole match like this. So I've had these moments in the past, but maybe never as extreme as tonight. So, you know, getting to 20 is obviously very, very special, no doubt.
It was a hot road to the final, literally. As Cilic explains, only to find the final would be an indoor match.
So it was difficult with conditions. You know, throughout the tournament, I played all my matches outdoors and, you know, preparing for a hot day, 38 degrees, and then first match for the final to play with the roof closed. It's difficult, and I have to say that with that decision, could have been different.
Federer was a little surprised as well by the closed roof.
At the end, it's not my decision. You know, they kept me posted along the way. I was surprised to hear that they had the heat rule in place for a night match. I never heard of that before. So when I arrived to the courts, I was totally ready to play outdoors. And then they told me they're thinking, or they think that it will probably be indoor. And then they kept me posted along the way. And half an hour before, we got the word that, okay, it's going to be indoors. And for me, it didn't change any in the preparation, to be honest. I was ready for either.
Although he didn't win, Cilic was happy with his experience.
Beating Rafa and reaching here, a final, which is definitely amazing. And looking at my own game, I think I improved a lot. I'm playing great tennis, and that's really exciting for me for this 2018.
And Federer goes home with an old friend.
I felt like it was very fitting, you know, to rather than saying, like, I'm bringing the trophy, I'm bringing Norman along. You know, it's like a friend now. We got to know each other. So it was just funny last year. I don't know if I'll do it again this year, but sure, Norman has a special place for us anyway. And it's great to be sitting with him here tonight, right now.
After 6 years, Caroline Wozniacki of Denmark is once again the world's top women's tennis player with her first career major title at the Australian Open.
Obviously, that's very special. I think being a new Grand Slam champion and world number one sounds pretty good. So I'm very excited for that, and it's a dream come true.
Wozniacki was becoming concerned she couldn't close out the win quickly over Simona Halep of Romania.
I had opportunities to go out 3-0 and 4-1, and I didn't take them, and she was playing really well, and I was thinking, you know, it looks like it may not be my day, but I was never really nervous at that point. I was just going to go out there and give it my all and swing for it, and I was playing aggressively. I think I played well and could have gone either way today.
But Halep just ran out of energy in the heat of the moment and heat from the sun.
After the first set, I just was out. I don't know what happened. No energy, no power, but then I came back in the third set, but when I had to serve for 5-3, the gas was gone.
Halep got over her disappointment by the time she spoke with the media.
I can still smile. It's fine. I cried, but now I'm smiling. It's just a tennis match in the end, but yeah, I'm really sad I couldn't win it.
Like Roger Federer, Wozniacki has a new special friend.
You know, being here tonight as a Grand Slam champion, Australian Open champion, it's very special. Daphne here is going home with me tonight, and I'll be cuddling with her, so yeah.
And thanks to my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson, for that spicy sports report. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The Super Bowl is not the only big sporting event taking place in the United States this weekend. One of the country's most prestigious indoor athletics meets, the Millrose Games, will take place in New York City on Saturday. Reporter Jonah Haskell has more details for us.
This February, as the world's attention turns towards South Korea and winter sports, track athletes from around the world are gathering in New York City for one of the premier indoor track events in the world, the Millrose Games. The 111th iteration of one of the most prestigious events in indoor track will take place on Saturday, February 3rd, at the Fort Washington Armory in northern Manhattan. Along with many of the United States' top high school and college athletes, some of the world's top long-distance runners, sprinters, hurdlers, long jumpers, and pole vaulters, to name just a few of the events, will be competing this weekend as they try to add to the game's already rich history. The Millrose Games trace their origin to 1908, when employees of the John Wanamaker Department Store formed an athletic and recreational club called the Millrose Athletic Association. The first version of the games were held that same year, and by 1914, after selling out the original venue the year before, they moved to the most famous arena in the world, Madison Square Garden. The games would remain at the Garden for the next 97 years, during which time numerous high school, collegiate, American, and world records were broken. The great Carl Lewis demolished the world indoor long jump record at the Millrose Games in 1984, and later that year went on to win 4 gold medals, including in long jump, at the Summer Olympics in Los Angeles. And while other events like long jump have always been part of the games, the marquee event has long been the Wanamaker Mile. Named for a former owner of the Wanamaker department store, Rodman Wanamaker, the event actually began as a mile-and-a-half race, first held at the 9th Millrose Games in 1916. But it was later reduced to a flat mile in 1926. Since then, it has been held 81 times and been won by 44 different men. Former world champion distance runner Eamon Coghlan of Ireland became synonymous with the event, as he won it 7 different times in the late 70s and 80s, His record was eclipsed, though, in 2010, when Kenyan-born American Bernard Laggett won his 8th Wanamaker Mile. Following its heyday in the mid to late 20th century, the popularity of the Millrose Games dwindled as indoor track itself lost recognition around the world. Long from the days of packing Madison Square Garden with 18,000 screaming fans, the 2010 Games only drew around 9,000 fans. This prompted the New York Roadrunners, the same nonprofit organization that operates the New York Marathon, to move the events uptown to the Armory, a smaller, more feasible location. but the move hasn't dampened the quality or ferocity of the competition. Last year's Wanamaker Mile winner Eric Jenkins shocked the field by taking the gold.
Coming down the stretch, Eric Jenkins looking for his first Wanamaker Mile. Jenkins wins it.
In recent years, Matt Centrowitz Jr., the American gold medalist in the 1500 meters at the 2016 Olympics in Rio, set the Wanamaker Mile record, finishing in 3 minutes, 50.63 seconds. While Centrowitz won't be running this year, his biggest rival, Nick Willis of New Zealand, will be in attendance. While he has managed both bronze and silver Olympic medals in the 1500 meters, Willis has gone 0-for-5 in the Wanamaker Mile in his career, finishing either second or third every time. With Centrowitz out of the way this year, he'll be looking to seize the moment. And also running in this year's Wanamaker Mile will be Josh Kerr, who's currently the U.S. Collegiate Champion in both indoor and outdoor mile. Adding star power in other events are American Olympian and former world champion Lolo Jones, who will compete in the 60-meter hurdles, and Jamaican Olympic gold medalist Asafa Powell will run as well. Powell is the current world record holder in the 100-yard dash, topping Usain Bolt with a time of 9.07 seconds. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Jonah Haskell in New York. Now back to Sonny Young in Washington.
Thanks, Jonah. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Let's give another Sunny Side of Sports salute to Dan Friedel, who hosted the show on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday this week. With the Winter Olympics officially opening February 9th, Dan had a chance to chat with American sports journalist Christine Brennan, who's packing her bags for Pyeongchang and coverage of her 18th Olympics. Let's listen in now to the final part of their conversation. Here's Dan.
Why don't you give our listeners two storylines that you're excited to follow as the games get going in February?
Well, that's a great thought, and probably there could be a lot more than two, but one, I'll stick with women's ice hockey for a moment because, of course, the men, kind of a corollary, the men will not be the NHL this time, and that's going to be maybe kind of fun because you're going to see, for the United States, for example, you're going to see, and other countries, Canada as well, you're going to see younger, minor league hockey players or college players, and that it kind of harkens back to 1980. Not going to be a, do you believe in miracles, miracle on ice, you're just never going to have that happen again. But it's you're going to have the Russians be favored because of their very strong, their pro league. But you're going to have a younger and more, not amateurs by any means, but college age or minor league in that sense, and fresher, younger faces. So in the men's side. The women's side, it's going to be fascinating to watch the U.S. team, and here's why. In the Me Too movement and in all the conversation we're having about equality for women in this country after the election of Donald Trump and what happened last year, and now this year, we're, of course, having the conversation about women's rights and equality and equal pay, et cetera. Well, the U.S. women's ice hockey team back in March really kicked the story off, and many probably don't remember or don't know, but they were threatened to boycott the world championships for it, to get better pay, not necessarily equal pay, it's the NHL that they're going against, but better travel, better conditions, better treatment all the way around financially and other from the Hockey Federation, the U.S. National Governing Body for Hockey, because they were getting table scraps compared to the men. And the women did threaten a boycott and did get a new contract, and it is much better. And so they fought that battle. And that's very much in keeping with the conversation we're all having now around whether it's Hollywood or politics or business or what have you. And so I find that fascinating. And then, of course, on the field of play, on the ice, in the rink, there, U.S. and Canada are 1-2, 2-1, and Canada's won the last couple times, and the U.S. so almost had it 4 years ago in Sochi and lost in the overtime after a heartbreaking last-second goal by Canada to tie it, and heartbreaking for the U.S., great for Canada. And so now the U.S. really, really wants that gold back, as, of course, you would imagine, and I fully imagine a U.S.-Canada gold medal match at the end of the games in women's hockey. It's going to be one of the highlights of the games, I think. And then I'll be around figure skating a lot, as you know, and always drama, always fascinating. In addition to the North Korean pair, assuming they're there, which again we'll assume nothing until it happens, but I hope they are. I think the women's competition in figure skating is going to be fascinating with two Russians right at the top, Evgenia Medvedeva, and her training mate, about 3 years younger, 15-year-old Elena Zagitova. So we call her Zag, and we call Medvedeva Med, for those who have trouble with the pronunciations or the names. And they will be 1-2 probably in the women's competition. Medvedeva has was in an undefeated streak of 2 years until beaten by her training mate just a couple weeks ago at the European Championships. On the men's side, it's all about the quad. Nathan Chen, 18 years old from the United States, is planning to do 5 quads in his long program. First ever on, person on earth, male, female, to ever do 5 quads in a long program. He did it last year at the U.S. Nationals in 2017, came back in 2018 in January to do that, and now he will... He is certainly a medal favorite of several Japanese skaters as well, including Yuzuru Hanyu, the reigning Olympic gold medalist coming back from an injury, Shoma Una, his countryman, and quite a few others from around the world doing 4 or 5 quads in the long program. It is going to be a jump fest, the likes of which we have never seen, and that ice is very slippery as they're landing on a quarter-inch blade of steel. But these young men are just unbelievable jumpers, having taken figure skating to an athletic high and plateau that we never would have envisioned. And that is going to be fascinating to watch how that plays out and who wins the gold and silver and bronze in the men's competition.
That's American sports journalist Christine Brennan, who will be traveling to South Korea for coverage of her 18th Olympics. And Christine was talking with Dan Friedel. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
In National Basketball Association news, Blake Griffin has made a successful debut with the Detroit Pistons. Griffin had 24 points and 10 rebounds Thursday night to help power the Pistons to a 104-102 victory over the visiting Memphis Grizzlies. The Pistons acquired Griffin from the Los Angeles Clippers earlier this week in a blockbuster trade. Speaking after the game, Griffin said, and I quote, "I wanted to just come out and play hard, being very limited in my knowledge of our offense." In other NBA results, in an all-Texas matchup, the Houston Rockets scored a 102-91 road victory over the San Antonio Spurs. James Harden, still sporting my favorite beard in basketball, led the Rockets once again with 28 points and 11 assists. Our Voice of America basketball fans will remember Harden recently put his name in the NBA record books by becoming the first player to have a triple-double while scoring 60 points in one game. Here in Washington, my favorite NBA team, the Washington Wizards, defeated the visiting Toronto Raptors 122-119. It was Washington's third consecutive victory without their all-star point guard, John Wall, who had knee surgery earlier this week and is not expected back on the court until mid-March at the earliest. Bradley Beal led the way for the Wizards with 27 points. Beal will be the Wizards' representative in the All-Star Game, the NBA All-Star Game, on February 18th in Los Angeles, California. More All-Star news. Miami Heat guard Goran Dragic has been named by NBA Commissioner Adam Silver as an injury replacement for the February 18th All-Star Game. The 31-year-old Slovenian guard will replace Cleveland Cavaliers forward Kevin Love, who recently broke his left hand in a game. And that wraps up the February 2nd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nelson Lopes. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In his first State of the Union address, President Donald Trump spoke about rebuilding America's strength and confidence at home and restoring its strength and standing abroad. The president stressed the importance of a strong military. Around the world, he observed, we face rogue regimes, terrorist groups, and rivals like China and Russia that challenge our interests, our economy, and our values. In confronting these horrible dangers, we know that weakness is the surest path to conflict, and unmatched power is the surest means to our true and great defense. President Trump highlighted recent military success in the fight against ISIS.
1 year later, I am proud to report that the coalition to defeat ISIS has liberated very close to 100% of the territory just recently held by these killers in Iraq and in Syria and in other locations as well. But there is much more work to be done. We will continue our fight until ISIS is defeated.
In the fight against terrorism, it is at times necessary to detain and question terrorists. President Trump stressed that terrorists are unlawful enemy combatants, and when captured overseas, they should be treated like the terrorists they are. To that end, the military detention facility at Guantanamo Bay will remain open. The U.S. continues to restore clarity about its adversaries, said President Trump.
When the people of Iran rose up against the crimes of their corrupt dictatorship, I did not stay silent. America stands with the people of Iran in their courageous struggle for freedom.
The U.S. has also imposed tough sanctions on the communist and socialist dictatorships in Cuba and Venezuela. But no regime has oppressed its own citizens more totally or brutally than North Korea, said President Trump.
North Korea's reckless pursuit of nuclear missiles could very soon threaten our homeland. We are waging a campaign of maximum pressure to prevent that from ever happening. Past experience has taught us that complacency and concessions only invite aggression and provocation.
America will continue to defend its interests and demonstrate its values as it pursues peace through strength.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.